And good morning. Welcome to Health Essentials. The number here at the station is 903-589-8507. I am never going to run out of information about how to improve your health. It's just impossible. Are you kidding me? There's so many volumes of books written on this topic. And it's really a good topic, too. Because when you're healthy and you're strong, that's your ticket to doing all the things that God has put in front of you to do. I looked in Randy's Bible this morning, and I flipped it straight open to the book of Colossians. And guess what verse I fell on top of? 3:23. And whatever you do, do it heartily, as to the Lord and not to men. Isn't that a good one? Could you imagine if just the most evil and wicked person read that verse and they said, you know what, I don't know about doing it to the Lord, but what if I do the very best that I can with a great attitude? Where would that get me? Well, good things would happen. Even if wicked people follow the principles of the Word of God, good things happen to them. Okay, I have several things that I want to cover, and I'm trying to answer questions that I've been asked, and so I'm just going to take them 1, 2, 3. But I was asked about glaucoma, and so this is actually the very first one that popped up because I was kind of looking at it from a different perspective. Do you know what? Have you ever heard of a natural substance called pycnogenol? That term has been used a lot, at least from my perspective, and the reason from my perspective is I'm looking for those things. So when you look for them, you come across those terms and you start asking, well, what is pycnogenol? And so there's a company, their claim to fame, I think the company's name is Horphag, H-O-R-P-H-A-G. Obviously, it's a foreign company. That doesn't sound like an American name. But anyway, let me read. Here's the title of the article right here. This came off PubMed, in case you want to look it up. It's July the 2008. I think the journal is called Molecular Vision. So when you read vision, they don't mean like tell me your dreams of the future and what you envision happening for your life or for a business. That's not what they mean by vision. They're talking about your eyesight. And this article is looking at something called glaucoma. I say we take glaucoma very seriously. Okay, here's the title of the article. Effects of mertogenol, which is just their patented and trademark name for pine bark extract. It says the effects of mertogenol on ocular blood flow and intraocular hypertension in asymptomatic subjects. And what they're getting at is people that are just about to develop glaucoma, which is way too much pressure in the eye. Even if you don't know much about glaucoma, there's a pretty good chance you know somebody that's suffering from it, and they'd probably like to have a solution. And I'm giving you one this morning, and this is a solution that has no bad side effects, and it's affordable, meaning it's not a pharmaceutical drug that costs 40 zillion pesos just to be able to afford it, which you know as well as I do. If a doctor prescribes a drug and you say, excuse me, that's $2,400 a month for this glaucoma medication, how am I going to do that? I'm on a fixed income. I rely on Social Security. I don't have $2,400 a month. Well, obviously, you do the math on it. You can't spend money on a drug that you don't have. But just consider this right here. I'll go ahead and read the article to you. And I'll make it short and to the point. There's a lot of them I'm going to skip because they have all these different charts. You don't need to know all that stuff. Plus, it's radio. I can't show you the charts. In 2008, researchers from Horphag, the producer of pine extract, which they call pycnogenol. Okay? So this is a flavonoid compound that comes from pine trees. Man, we have pine trees everywhere around here, but I think they're using what's called the French maritime pine tree. Okay. They published a small human study in which they had 38 subjects. They participated, obviously, and the subjects had one thing in common. The pressure that was inside their eye was greater than 22 millimeters of mercury, or it was higher than that. And there's a point where you have so much pressure that you have glaucoma. And glaucoma long-term can do what? Well, you can lose your eyesight. Anybody listening out there want to lose their eyesight? No, absolutely not. I mean, I love the story of Helen Keller. I mean, it's amazing about what somebody can do to overcome and have a good attitude. It's very inspiring. But there's no reason to lose your eyesight if there's something that you can do to help preserve your eyesight. Anyway, in this study, though, even though pressure was building up in their eyes and they were headed toward glaucoma, they wanted to find out if there was something that could be done to actually turn it around. That means change the course or the direction they're headed toward. Anybody here want to wait till they have a full-blown case of a disease and then try to treat it? Well, no. What do they say? An ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure? There is a reason why that phrase is stuck. So these people could still see. And if I'm not mistaken, according to the charts, they could see pretty clearly, but the pressure was still there. So if somebody goes to an optometrist, an ophthalmologist, and pressure's building up in the eye, that's who I'm talking to. But I have another point in here that really relates to everybody. In the form of glaucoma in which the researchers were interested, the visual field is reduced to damage to the nerve pathways in the eye as a direct result of the excessively high blood pressure in the eye. You get where I'm coming from here? So the people in the study, they had way too much blood pressure in their eye. Just like if somebody has excessive blood pressure in their body, high blood pressure, well, guess what's going to happen? It's going to damage everything. Your kidneys are not miraculously improved and better because of high blood pressure. No, just the opposite. Too much pressure, it beats them up. It damages them. Creates inflammation. Okay. The name of the supplement is called Mirtogenol. Mirtogenol. That's just their name they chose for it. But it's pine bark extract and bilberry. Okay, when I say the word bilberry, what I want you to think of is blueberries. Is that hard to... No, it's not. That's easy. Haven't you seen Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory? The little girl stuffed her mouth with blueberries, and guess what she turned into? A blueberry. Thank goodness that doesn't happen when you eat a bowl of blueberries. Okay, half of the subjects received a placebo, which means it didn't have the pine bark extract or the bilberry extract. Those are our two ingredients. The other half received just two capsules daily of what's called Mirtogenol, which is a combination of pycnogenol, which is an extract, a flavonoid they get from pine trees, the bark of pine trees, that's it, the bark, and then they use an extract of bilberry. And bilberries contain anthocyanidines, which is a very close cousin of the blueberry. I'm actually looking at the supplement facts and the list of ingredients. I always like looking at the ingredient list because sometimes you don't know what a supplement has unless you look at it. Okay, here's a punchline in case you want to write these two things down. There was 40 milligrams of pycnogenol, which is pine bark extract, and I think it said it had 80 milligrams of bilberry. That's right, okay. That's really not much. That's like a tiny capsule, 120 milligram capsule. 20 plus 80, 40 plus 80 is 120. That's right. Okay, after 2 months of supplementation, and I realize these are numbers, but just kind of play along like it makes sense. After they took this supplement, two capsules a day, for 2 months, the pressure in the eye dropped from 25.2 millimeters of mercury down to 22. And I thought to myself, that's pretty significant. It lowered the pressure by 3.2 millimeters of mercury. And this is showing that usually 2 months did the job quite well. The control group that took the placebo, their pressure didn't drop at all. If anything, it looks like it went up a little bit. Okay, so one of the ways the researchers tried to figure out if the pine bark and the bilberry or the blueberry worked is they used an ultrasound technology to determine. They're trying to test the eyes. They want to find out how quickly blood could move through a number of crucial blood vessels in the eye. And I thought, well, I like that. Wouldn't that be an interesting test? It doesn't involve a needle. It doesn't involve radiation. It's just ultrasound. So they're using sound waves. The speed increased due to the supplementation, according to the table below. Do you see the table? Of course you don't, because I'm looking. This is a radio. Anyway, do you get what I'm saying here? They took people that were headed toward glaucoma. They got too much pressure in their eye. The nerves are being damaged. They're losing their vision. Or they're headed toward losing their vision. Excuse me, that would have been the more correct statement. And they gave them a pine bark and bilberry. And guess what happened? Blood flow increases. Now, you do not have to be a health expert to understand that. Anything that decreases the delivery of oxygen to the brain, what's going to happen? That's going to lead to very poor cognitive performance. I could probably say simply that the number one reason behind people losing the ability to think and to recall, and they lose the performance of their mind and their brain as they age, it's just changes in the microvascular circulation. Their circulation becomes poor. Well, you know what that means. They cannot get enough oxygen and blood flow to the brain to nourish the brain cells so they can work right. I don't think this has to be a difficult conversation. If you don't want your brain to work, don't give it oxygen. So anything that improves blood flow, could you imagine if we had like a V8 engine on a sports car and somebody said, we are going to reduce the flow of oil through the engine by 50%, and we're going to see what happens. Well, what do you think is going to happen? If you don't have circulating oil to keep the cylinders and the bearings and everything else well lubricated, well, what's going to happen? Well, you already know what's going to happen. The engine is not going to last real long. Not like it should last if it has great lubrication. Does that make sense? Okay, here's the conclusion of the study. Our study is the very first one demonstrating or showing that dietary intervention can help control intraocular pressure and increase ocular blood flow. Okay, basically they're talking about what do you do for glaucoma. I like that. They said that these, that's basically the researcher summarize. Let's prevent glaucoma here. And how do you do that? Pine bark and blueberries or bilberry. Now, I don't know how that translates to you and what you're dealing with, but I can tell you this. Where you have blood flow and circulation, you have life. Doesn't the Bible tell us in Leviticus that the life is in the blood? Well, as long as blood is moving, you might do pretty, pretty well. Okay? That's article number one. Number two. Now, this is a question that I was asked this week. A lady asked me, what about olive oil? Is olive oil good for you? She said, I read so many things that says it's not. Some say it is. Well, this is the very first article that I looked up. And so, I mean, I don't have endless time to look up all of them, but I found this one right here. This one says, it comes from Spain. The title is Olive Oil Consumption and All-Cause Cardiovascular and cancer mortality in an adult Mediterranean population in Spain. So that's all they're looking at, is they're looking at, do the people die of cardiovascular disease? We're talking about having a coronary, having a heart attack, a myocardial infarction. If you want to say a blood clot in the heart, it stops working, not good. And then I think just about everybody listening, they probably have heard of cancer before. Man, cancer is on the increase. That's maybe another topic for another day. But all they're asking is, what about consuming olive oil? So here's the study right here. In the year 2022, researchers from the Universidad Miguel Hernandez published a study in Frontiers, I think it's a journal, Frontiers in Nutrition is the name of the journal, in case you want to look it up, in which 1,567 adult Spaniards participated. The researchers then measured how much olive oil the study participants consumed daily for a week, and then they monitored them closely for 18 years. I kind of dig stuff like that when they do it over 18 years. Maybe we can learn something. Here's the results right here. After the researchers brushing out the effect of lifestyle factors as best as possible with statistical methods, the researchers found that during the study, participants who consumed 2 or more tablespoons of olive oil daily, they were 31% less likely to die than participants who did not consume olive oil. Am I out of place by suggesting that if there was a drug that could reduce your risk of dying by 31%, that it would be the most heavily promoted drug on the planet? And who knows what the price would be? But how would the price of that compare with olive oil? The next question is, can you really improve upon the very thing that God has made and designed? It comes from the soil and the earth and the microbiome of the planet and all the nutrients in the soil and all the factors. There's just too many to list. It's a plant. God designed it. It knows exactly what to do. So with an intake of at least 2 tablespoons of olive oil per day, they reduce the risk of death, and specifically from cardiovascular disease. Now, if we change that and look at that number, 2 tablespoons of olive oil a day reduce cardiovascular disease or death from heart disease by 46%. I guess you want to know what the risk of dying from cancer was. 51% less. Isn't that spectacular? You reduce your risk of dying from cancer by 51% if you take 2 tablespoons of olive oil a day. I would have no problem if somebody put a salad in front of me and I took some Bragg's sesame ginger salad dressing, which is made of olive oil and sesame seeds and ginger. You ever heard of ginger before? And apple cider vinegar. Oh, did I mention olive oil yet? Anyway, so yeah, the answer to the question is olive oil is the bomb. Of course, I have the chart here, and here on the chart they look at the probability of death and they make it into a mathematical equation versus the years of follow-up. Oh my goodness, it did not take long to figure out. It was probably around, man, it looks like to me like the 1 year mark that they could start seeing a statistical separation. Meaning, people, the one that's the part of the chart that kind of blows my mind is the people that use no olive oil whatsoever. Are you kidding? They're having all the cancer and the heart disease. They're dying prematurely. And it's a huge separation. Anyway, they go on to say, what's in olive oil? Olive oil contains a monounsaturated fatty acids. I think one of them is called oleic acid. It also is a rich source of vitamin E. I don't know if you've ever heard of vitamin E as a fat-soluble vitamin or a nutrient. It actually protects your body from free radicals or excessive oxidation. It's known as an antioxidant. And even if you look at those two elements right there, oleic acid and vitamin E, and you ask the question, do they actually extend a person's lifespan? The answer is yes. When they do studies to break down the individual singular ingredients. But I like the studies on olive oil, which combines everything. The researchers also suspect that phenols in olive oil, such as tyrosol and hydroxytyrosol and oleuropine. I'm so sorry. That's the best I can do. It says these substances may protect blood vessels and inhibit inflammation and the growth of tumors. Maybe that's all you need to know. So the answer to the question that I was posed the other day was, is olive oil maybe something that would be good for a human being to consume if they want to live. Yeah. You know what? Even what it said about olive oil and suppressing inflammation, folks, you've got to understand that every disease that you do not want, it's driven by inflammation. That is not in your best interest. Okay. Article number 3 here. And then we'll go to the phone lines, and I'll try to answer any question that you may have. Obviously, I'm very biased. I have an angle on this. I always want to consider things that do not poison the body. Sometimes, folks, and I know that you've heard this many times, a person could be sick, they could be administered a drug, and they're in worse shape than what they were before the drug. And so you know where I'm coming from. Sometimes drugs can have deadly consequences. Sometimes the consequences can be so bad, it's, you don't recover from them. Or what if you took a drug and the side effect was you had to spend 2 months in a hospital and that cost you $30 billion that you have to pay for because of the side effect of the drug? Actually, you need to be careful what forms you sign when you go. Anyway, here's the next article right here. And this one's not real long either, but it's short. But it's food for thought. I have, sometimes I like to listen to what people say about different things. And even just regular everyday people, I like the ones that are super curious. They like to ask questions. They want to study things and figure them out. And I like that very much. And I think we should be the same way. So I want you to think of what's called telomeres. Anyway, here's the article right here. The title of the article, and I don't even see the year. Oh, here it is right here. It was published in October of 2023. So this is a brand new article. Or, October of last year. Not that long ago. Okay. Time spent jogging or running and what they call biological aging in 4,458 United States adults. It's called an NHANES investigation study. Okay. Here's a study. American researchers at Brigham Young University, they analyzed data from 4,458 adults who participated in the National Health and Nutrition Examination Study. That's called the NHANES. And you may read that multiple times when you study how to improve your health. Interesting, anyway. A laboratory had determined the telomere length in the DNA of white blood cells from the study participants. Now, even if you don't know this, here's one of the punchlines, that the length of the telomeres, it says something about aging on a molecular level. The researchers, so basically, the longer the telomeres, the longer you can stay in good working order, you can be healthy. But when they become short and they're burned out and there's nothing left, that's when your body can't heal. How about that? The researchers then determined whether the study participants were runners or joggers. That's all they're asking. They could have asked a million other questions, but they just wanted to find out. Out of these almost 4,500 individuals, they wanted to find out who went jogging or running and who didn't. That's it right there. So if they were a jogger, they wanted to find out how many minutes a week they exercised, okay? Now, this, to me, is pretty interesting, because I just want you to hear me out on this. Here's the results right here, and just listen to the amount of time that they jogged. In the cells, and of course, they have to get the white blood cells out so they can measure the length of their telomeres to find out how the people are aging, okay? In the cells of the runners who ran at least 75 minutes a week. Now, just play along with me here. If there's 7 days in a week, and if I divide that into 75 minutes, what do I come up with? That's basically just a little over 10 minutes a day. That's it. Does 10 minutes sound like a horrible length of time to go for like a light jog? If you can, okay. But the other point I'm getting to is you got to move your body. Anyway, so when the runners who ran at least 75 minutes a week, the telomeres were, this is going to be hard to compute right here, but just play along like it makes sense. The telomeres were 190 base pairs longer in the cells of the study participants who were not physically active. I don't expect that to mean a lot, but what they're saying is when you would jog 75 minutes a week, your telomeres are so much longer than people that don't do anything. And here's the next thing they say right here. They say that telomeres, they shorten during the aging process. So think about every disease that you don't want. Well, that's what telomeres are getting too short. That's why you got it. The researchers calculated that the measured difference between the telomere length of the runners and the non-active runners, they correspond to an age difference of 12 and a half years. Now, they went on to say that could it be that runners have a healthier lifestyle than non-runners? Well, yeah, that's a fair question. Fair enough. And that may be their healthy diet or lifestyle explain the difference. But after the researchers had removed the effect of age as far as possible, that difference was still there. I don't know if you really heard me on that, but let me say it a different way. When you jog for 75 minutes a week, that's a little over, just a hair over 10 minutes a day, what that results is 12 and a half years longer on the earth that you could be doing good and be participating in good works and using all these tremendous gifts and skill sets that God's given you. You could be growing and learning and maturing and getting better. I do believe that is possible, that you could get better and better. Is it possible for a person to become more grateful as they age? Is that possible? Well, I've seen that. I've also seen the reverse of that, where people become more angry and bitter and resentful and complain more. Anyway, we're not here to talk about that. Okay. So they're saying the present findings support the current United States vigorous activity guidelines. That's great. The government has guidelines on being vigorous with exercise. So running or jogging 75 minutes a week. Here's, and let me give you the phone number. 903-589-8507. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Dr. Morgan, would you give us the name of what we can go to the health food store and buy for the glaucoma that has the pine bark and the blueberries?
Well, the name of this particular product was called, let me look it up, I've got it here. It was called Mir, it's spelled MIRTOGENOL, but what it was just pine bark extract or pycnogenol. Pycnogenol is spelled P-Y-C-N-O-G-E-N-O-L, pycnogenol. So it was that in bilberry. That's all it was.
So we just eat a bunch of blueberries?
I think that's safe to say that when you eat blueberries, you're doing yourself a favor.
Okay, so we don't need the pine bark extract.
No, that's something that you're saying. That's not what I'm saying.
I'm trying to clarify what you're saying.
Okay. So to clarify, the study that I was looking at to prevent glaucoma, they gave them pine bark extract and bilberry extract. So I'm just saying that blueberries here in North America are almost identical to bilberries in their composition. They have the same good beneficial health properties.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the whole purpose of the article, to suggest that if you took pine bark extract or pycnogenol and you took some bilberry or blueberry, that would help create an environment for you could have much better blood flow through your eyes. And the other thing I didn't say, if you have better blood flow in the eyes, don't you think that would translate that you have better circulation through your kidneys or your liver, or down to your toes or your brain cells, all that good stuff?
Sure.
Everybody knows already I need more blood flow through my brain. So those are the two things that they used, and I find that so interesting. It's the first study of any kind that's ever been done that showed that if they gave pine bark extract, which is just an herb, I guess, and bilberry, that all of a sudden it improved the blood flow in the eyes and reduced the pressure, which means glaucoma is going away or preventing glaucoma. So I thought that was pretty cool.
That is pretty cool. And so, bottom line, how do I get these products into my system?
Well, you open your mouth and you pick up the caps.
Well,
no. So what exactly do you want me to say? I don't know that I'm actually understanding your question, because I'm saying that it's pine bark and bilberry. So does that make sense? That's what you need to put into your mouth?
Yeah, but okay. So how do I get pine bark? I guess I'm asking, is there a capsule that has?
Oh yes, ma'am, and that's what the whole study is just about. That it's in a capsule form. Yes, ma'am. I see where you're coming from now.
And what's the name of the capsule that I asked for?
It's called pine bark and bilberry.
Those are the
ingredients. Yes, ma'am. So I don't know every manufacturer's name. If it says, for all I know, there's a company called the Acme, you know, Pine Bark Extract Company. I'm not familiar with every company that makes it. So when you go to the health food store, or you go online, you would type in pine bark extract or bilberry extract.
Okay.
And I've given the name like about seven times about the mertogenol or whatever it's called, but that's just too wordy. So as long as the ingredients contain pine bark and bilberry, that's what I'm telling you that you should look for. And if you can find that, then you can have confidence that will help your circulation of your eyes and reduce eye pressure.
Okay. That's what I needed to know.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Yes, ma'am. Thanks for your phone call. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. If you'd like to join me on the radio, there is a phone line open at 903-589-8507. I'm not the least bit surprised, because some of these names, they're so different than what we're used to, so I get that. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dr. Morgan. How are you today?
I am excellent. Thank you so much for your phone call, sir.
Oh, thank you for taking it. We have a quick question. We have a good friend who has a hiatal hernia. She has that acid reflux. She is about 80 years old or so, and we wondered if you have any suggestions that for maybe relieving that for her.
Now, personally, I think those are easy to fix.
Oh, wonderful.
Okay, so let me kind of give you about four or five different ideas. It's entirely possible in some people, if they eat super greasy foods or a lot of sugar, or they drink a lot of coffee, or drink a lot of tea, or they eat a lot of chocolate, or peppermint. Those things have been shown that if you get too much of them, they can make it flare up. They can. And I think you kind of get that. I mean, I don't really have to explain to you that if you eat the greasiest pepperoni pizza of all time, and you eat like three Snicker bars before you go to bed, you might be asking for some acid reflux about 11:30 p.m., right?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So one solution is to avoid the things that you know kind of stir it up and make it worse. Now, the next one, technically in medicine, if you went to a gastroenterologist, they would probably say your real problem is with what's called the LES. That stands for lower esophageal sphincter. Have you ever heard that term before?
I think I have, yes.
Well, a sphincter is a ring-like muscle, and you have one at the top of the stomach or at the very end of the esophagus. So let me give you an example. What should happen is if this 80-year-old friend takes a glass of water or, you know, green tea, hibiscus tea, and she drinks it, it normally takes between 1 and 2 seconds for the water to go from your mouth and you swallow it to get to the stomach. So I think that's fair, 1 to 2 seconds. Now, food's different. food requires like the conveyor belts to like move it down into your stomach. So if you have a bowl of chicken fried rice and you take a bite of it, that may take 10 to 12 seconds before the food actually ends up in the stomach. Does that make sense?
Yes.
But that ring, that lower esophageal sphincter, it's got to open and close properly. Now, if it's able to close all the way and seal off all that super, super duper high acid in the stomach, which I always think that's incredible. How did God design an organ that can handle, a pH of 1.5 or 2? It could just burn through a chain link fence. It's so strong. But if that sphincter doesn't close all the way, it almost creates a situation where it becomes lax, or it loses its tone. That might be another. Think of a muscle that usually is strong, but it's lost its tone, so it's pretty lax and flabby. Well, that acid goes back up again. Now, I'm going to tell you something that's going to sound radical, but I want you to hear me out, because this might be the greatest solution of all time. That lower esophageal sphincter, sometimes I call it the cardiac sphincter, it won't close properly all the way if you don't have enough acid in the stomach. And I know this is going to sound crazy, because I'm telling you the exact polar opposite of what they're telling her to do. They're probably saying, you need more acid-blocking drugs. We need to give you some Tums. We'll give you some Alka-Seltzer, and we'll give you Prilosec, Omeprazole, Pantoprazole. They'll just Pepcid AC. They'll give you all those drugs. But the real issue is, as a human being ages, especially an 80-year-old female, she's not making enough stomach acid to tell that valve to shut. And if it doesn't shut, those acids are going to start boiling up in her throat. They're called volatile organic acids. So she may go to the health food store and just purchase a supplement called Betaine HCl.
Betaine?
HCl, as in capital H, capital C, capital L. That stands for hydrochloric acid, if you've ever heard that before.
Yes, but the betaine, is that...
Yeah, that's just the common form that they have available. They have another one that's based on... I can't remember now. It begins with a G. But the one called betaine, B-E-T-A-I-N-E, betaine. Betaine hydrochloride, hydrochloric acid. So if she were to eat a meal, let's just say she has two scrambled eggs with cheese and salt and pepper on them, and a half an avocado for breakfast this morning, what she would do is she would start off by taking one capsule of hydrochloric acid. That's the betaine hydrochloride.
Okay.
And if she says, oh my goodness, that's weird, I don't have a hiatal hernia anymore, I don't have all this acid reflux and this pressure, and so one capsule would fix it. But I'm open to the idea that we might have to experiment somewhere between one or two or three, because we're trying to find what I might call the Goldilocks just right dose of acid. And if I'm right about this, guess what happens? She starts actually absorbing more protein and nutrients and vitamins and minerals from her food to bless her body with. And one text that I get frequently from patients is they'll say, oh my goodness, Dr. Morgan, my bowel movements are fabulous now. I've gone from not being regular to this is like the best bowel movements I've ever had before. Would you like me to send you some videos of my bowel movements, Dr. Morgan? I always text back, absolutely not. I'm so sorry, I'm too busy today to look at them. But my point is, anything that radically changes the performance of the digestive tract for the better and blesses this sweet lady, that's what we want. Does that sort of make sense?
Yes. Yes.
Can I cover two more points just real quick? If she were to go to a website called YouTube, she could type in how to correct a hiatal hernia, and it shows literally a video of somebody pushing their stomach back down below the diaphragm to get back in place. Now, chiropractors have done this for like centuries, probably. They just hook their fingers on the top of the stomach while the patient's laying down, and they just manually pull the stomach back down through the diaphragm to put it back into place. And usually it's night and day. It's very easy to do. There's a lot of different techniques. I like the one that's more tolerable and gentle. You can do one that's a little bit rougher, but I don't like that one so much. And then the last thing, this one's not going to be easy to necessarily understand, because I'm going to ask you to trust me on this. You don't have to. But if she loses the strength of her pelvic floor and her hip flexors, then her stomach is going to go up to the diaphragm. So that's my way of saying she should be doing exercises to strengthen her pelvic floor and her hip flexors. And if they become stronger, it may be that her stomach just magically has no more issues. So between that and the hydrochloric acid and avoiding foods that stir it up or make it worse, then I would say she's in business.
Great.
Because I would prefer her just fix this naturally and not require multiple surgeries or drugs.
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah, we're on the same page.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Morgan.
You're sure welcome. Thank you so much for your phone call. I'm sure it's helped a whole bunch of other people, too. Appreciate you, buddy.
Thanks. Have a blessed day.
Oh, thank you so much. You too. Bye-bye. All right, the phone line is once again open. The number here is 903-589-8507. Please give me a shout. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Good morning.
Well, thank you for your phone call, ma'am.
Yes, I'm looking for something that would help someone who's just been diagnosed with cancer of the pancreas.
Well, you're absolutely asking me the hardest one of all time.
I know. I like supplements. I've taken supplements in all my life. But I know when we start this process, they're going to give us all these other things. And I just thought, what is one thing or some things that my husband has some issues, like he's taking warfarin. And so sometimes they tell us we can't take everything, but we take probably more minerals than we're supposed to, or they would say.
You mean you're doing something without your doctor approving of it?
I've done lots of things like that.
Oh, man, you know how to push the limits, don't you?
Well, and it's kind of on the top of his stomach, so he's had pain. So the first thing they want to give you is hydrocodone.
Wait, I didn't catch the last one. The first thing they want to give him is what?
That real strong pain hydrocodone.
Oh, hydrocodone. No, I know what you mean.
Yeah, codone. Yeah.
And yeah, but so the side effect is you have horrible constipation.
I know, and we don't need that. So I like olive oil and that sort of thing. I think you said even tumors. We have not been into the initial appointment with the doctor, but they pretty much said it would probably be chemo because of where it's located.
Well, let's talk about the things that he can do that would benefit him, independent apart from whatever chemo or radiation or treatment they might recommend. Is that okay?
Right.
Okay, so let me give you two quick ideas, and I don't know if they're really even valid, but let me say them anyway. There is a high correlation to pancreatic cancer developing and lifetime consumption of sugars and refined carbohydrates.
Okay.
And so one of the things I'm saying is, whatever I would do if it was me, I would not eat sugar. Does that make sense?
Well, he's pretty much stopped that in a way because he's lost 20 pounds.
Well, that's the next thing. We gotta try to get him to gain some weight. So there's a battle between the use of resources. The cancer or the tumor is trying to steal and eat all his resources. I need to kind of give him. So let me just jump to the first thought that came to my head. And what we can do is you can start looking up articles about this or looking at studies. The last caller was a real sweet gentleman, and you could tell he was calling on behalf of an 80-year-old woman that had a hiatal hernia.
Right.
And I mentioned the use of hydrochloric acid. So one of the techniques that's been used to try to counter pancreatic cancer,
okay,
it's the heavy use of digestive enzymes. And so
digestive enzymes.
Oh yes, ma'am. And one of the digestive enzymes would be called pancreatic enzymes.
Oh, pancreatic.
And so in my mind, I want to make the body so inhospitable to cancer growing and thriving and being able to do what it wants to do. And one of the ways that I would do that is using very substantial amounts of digestive and pancreatic enzymes and hydrochloric acid.
Okay, the two together?
Absolutely. And what this is an experiment. I'm not trying to tell you that I'm guaranteeing this or that or the other thing, but I'm telling you what I would do if it was me. So let's just say, for example, your husband has homemade chicken salad. You made it with love. It's got celery and onions in it. I don't know. Does pickles sound good? But if he has
pickles, grapes.
Yeah, exactly. And so if he was to eat that for lunch, probably at the end of the meal, I would start playing a game where I'm asking the question, how many enzymes can I tolerate before I become nauseous? That's the game. I know that's not a fun game. And so that means if he says, and I don't mind telling you what I would use. I use a product called Zypan by Standard Process, Z-Y-P-A-N. So what?
I have those because I use that too, Zypan. Oh, I have that.
I knew there was an air of geniusness about thee. You are so smart. No. So what he would do is he would, and I don't mind just kind of cutting to the chase. He's probably going to have to start out at about 4, 5, 6, or 7 per meal to get him started.
Okay, 4 to 7.
Yeah, I'm guessing. And then on top of that, he may look at other digestive enzymes or pancreatic enzymes to kind of add to that equation.
Okay. Well, I've gone to Dr. Langus for years.
Yeah, okay.
For myself.
Oh, he's a super nice guy.
And I've taken him.
By the way, he's good looking. He's super funny. Now, he's kind of shy. He doesn't talk about himself very much, so you got to really drag that out of him. Is that correct?
Oh, I don't know about that.
What? You mean I got him pegged wrong? I thought that it took forever for him to start opening up and talking about himself.
Well.
No, I'm just joking.
It's been different after he got cancer. But anyway.
Yeah. So think about a very significant amount of Zypan.
Okay.
Now, I know I'm jumping into a second category, but I'm pleading with him. He's got to move as much as he can to get oxygen into the body.
Yes, we've been trying that. We walked twice yesterday.
So let me play.
We've been walking.
Good.
This rain is just not good. We need to get in a gym or something, maybe.
Ma'am, don't make excuses. He can start paddling you up and down the city streets of Tyler. In the canoe.
No, that won't work.
Why?
That's right. He could do that on our yard.
You mean, oh, do you live in Lake Tyler?
No, just about.
What's the name of the street you live on?
181 in
Lake Ford. Lake 181. It's the new name of it.
With fallen trees.
With fallen. Hey, Fallen Tree Lake. I like it.
Yeah. That's what we have.
The newest lake in East Texas is Fallen Tree Lake. We'll go fishing there. Okay, so I got to play the other side of it now. Do you know what baking soda is?
Yes.
Technically, it's called sodium bicarbonate. Now, I know I'm playing this both angles, but he wouldn't take this with his meals. He would take this completely separate on an empty stomach, but I think that provides something that almost nothing else does. And it may be that he kind of looks at taking some in the morning and maybe some in the evening, but as long as it's on an empty stomach, not with the hydrochloric acid or the Zypan or the pancreatic enzymes, because those two
can
kind of
oppose. Can I put it in coffee or juice?
Yeah, you can. If he can tolerate it, you betcha.
Well,
if you make
coffee.
Him a cup of organic coffee and you want to put a little bit of, like a half a teaspoon of baking soda in it, that's fine by me.
Okay.
Now, the other thing is, and I realize we just don't have time this morning, but let me give you 3 or 4 ideas. Is that okay?
Yes.
And so I've got to just jump into it. I can't give you like a long explanation, but what we want is we need his immune system to do everything within its power to do a better job of trying to rise to the occasion and run toward the pancreatic cancer and try to beat it up, eat it, and kill it if it's possible.
Right.
And so some of the ways you would do that, for example, there's a mushroom extract that's called turkey tail.
Turkey tail.
Yeah.
Now, like, my problem, my problem is that's a herb, right?
Well, it's a mushroom. Yeah, herb.
Mushroom, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so with warfarin, he takes warfarin.
Well, then look it up and just find out if I know what they're saying, but the prize that I'm thinking of, I'm not trying to mess up his blood thickness or thinness. That's not what I'm here for. But
no.
But I can tell you this, he needs every advantage that he can get to help his body deal with this. So I'm trying to think about what's his best interest. So you can do is
turkey tail.
Yeah, you can get, so if it's a problem, all we have to do is just Google it and find out, can I take turkey tail with warfarin or blood thinners? And we'll look up as many studies as we can. Now, if I had a laptop computer right in front of me, I could do it for you because it's like easy. All I got to do is type in turkey tail and warfarin and find out what the reports say. Or if I can. There may not be anything on it. But so consider that because, you know, the whole idea of what's called immunotherapy, it's really the idea that we're trying to help his natural God-given immune system just work better and more efficiently. And literally, that's really all I really want his body to do is if I can get his immune system to work about 10 to 20% better, then he's got some hope. So in simplicity, the other two things I want you to prayerfully consider that I think will have no negative impact upon the warfarin would be spleen extract and thymus extract.
Thymus and what is
thymus and spleen.
Okay.
Now, I don't know how many people I've... Yes, ma'am. I do not know how many people that I've seen over the last zillion years that I've been working. That's just a joke, by the way. That have completely gone into remission as long as they continue to take thymus and spleen. Now, I've had a lot of patients that took it for 1 week and decided they didn't want to take it, and they're gone. They are no longer walking the earth. But I am just flabbergasted at times how long people live when you give them spleen and thymus extract.
So it's not together. You have to get them separate.
No, if they come together, that's fine by me, but usually usually I get them as separate. So do you know what the word desiccated means? Actually, let me say it differently. If they take a calf to the meat processing facility, I try not to call it the slaughterhouse, but the meat packer, if they take the spleen out and they dehydrate it and put it in tablet form, that's what I'm talking about.
Right, okay.
Or if they take the thymus gland, which that's the largest gland of the immune system, and the spleen is the largest filter of the immune system, so...
Well, isn't that bovine...
Yes, exactly. You're bingo. Yeah. I knew you'd figure it out. So bovine thymus and bovine spleen, that's what we want to feed his body to give his body a chance to overcome.
Okay.
He's got to start weight training immediately with dumbbells or something.
Well, he had some weight to lose. And, I mean, he was like 220, and he was looking to lose some weight, and so we kind of cut out a lot of sugar, and he still eats ice cream once in a while and things like that.
I'm going to pretend I didn't hear that comment. Keep going, ma'am.
And so, but he lost weight on doing that, and so we realized he thought he had the flu, and so it took a while for us to realize there must be something else.
Did he have a lot of pain in his stomach?
Well,
or was
he
nauseous?
Right on the top.
He had what?
And he had pain on the top of his stomach, so that's right where the pancreas comes together there. But he also has had, years ago he had a on the aorta of the abdomen, he had surgery. And so he's had two hernias.
Like an aneurysm or something like that?
Well, he didn't have it. He found it on a regular checkup. And so they cut him open. This was 20 years ago. But he's had hernias since. And so we kind of thought this was a hernia.
Well, I want you to go backwards. Why did he have the surgery on the abdominal aorta?
Because it was large.
That's called an aneurysm.
Aneurysm, yes.
Yeah, okay.
But
I just wanted to—I want to make sure. Anyway.
Yeah, it was an aneurysm on the aorta. Yes.
Well, I would say
found.
Mm-hmm.
It was found, and so they did surgery. And since then, he's had a couple hernias. And so we thought it was the scars in that, because it was kind of in the same area.
No, and I get that. So if you gave me a rough timeline, how long do you think he's had these symptoms? If he were just to be...
Probably 2 months.
Okay, 2 months. Okay. Well, no, that's reasonable. But did he just get a scan of the pancreas or a test that shows that he has pancreatic cancer?
We had a C scan.
Okay.
And they said because he has pacemaker, they would not do an MRI. They would rather go down the throat. So he did a upper EUS. No, let's see. Is that what it's called?
ECG?
Yeah, something. Yes, and so they went down with a camera. Then they took a biopsy also. The biopsy came back cancerous. So we have not gone to our initial appointment with the oncologist yet.
Okay, but that's coming pretty quick here, isn't it?
Coming Thursday.
Okay. Well, I sure am rooting for you. I mean, I love him. I want him to do well. What a great woman you are supporting him.
Well, we listen to you every Saturday morning, and I take a lot away from what you say. And I try it on myself, but I don't know. I'm just one that will try supplements and the real way instead of all this other stuff.
Do you think he would do anything that I say?
Yes, yes.
Then I have two recommendations. He needs to plunge in ice cold water every day, and he needs to do coffee retention enemas.
What's coffee? What's that?
Well, you're going to have to look it up on YouTube. Go to YouTube and type in how to perform a coffee retention enema.
Oh, enema. I didn't have retention enema.
Oh, well, I'm bad about saying things fast.
Enema.
So, enema. Yes, a coffee retention enema. And look up the term cold shower or cold plunge.
Oh, you know what? He loves the warm ones. He takes the bath morning and night.
You mean he does a warm plunge every day?
Yes, twice.
We're going to do it. Well, you need to look it up and decide if that's really what you want to do.
Plunge. Okay, just cold water. What does that do?
Well, you live on Fallen Tree Lake.
You wouldn't want to go in this water.
I'm going to suggest that it's going to have a tremendous ability to help saturate his body with oxygen. I think it's going to probably get rid of, I think it's going to help rid his body of a tremendous amount of stress that he's holding on to.
So you say the plunge, it's not stay there long, just get under
for
a bit?
Yeah, but do your own research. So if you went to the internet or let's just say YouTube and type in, how long should a person do a cold plunge for when they're trying to radically help heal their body? Just see what they say and just kind of play with it. Let that roll around his head a little bit.
Okay. Okay. I've heard you say that to other people. And I'm thinking, we're always cold.
And there's nobody that's going to say, oh, Dr. Morgan, this is the most awesome recommendation. We think you're the best. This is great. Nobody says that. But sometimes you're doing what is in the best interest of your immune system body to heal.
Yeah.
So at least those are some ideas right there. And I think the coffee retention enema is one of the ways that we can start purging the massive amount of toxins that he's come in contact with. I don't mind making the comment that the other day I was reading that over a person's lifetime that they deal with between 10 and 12,000 pounds of toxic man-made poison. They got to process it, detoxify it.
Right. So that means no coffee. Don't drink coffee.
Well, I don't mind if he drinks one cup of coffee, but there are studies that show that when you drink a lot of coffee, you're asking for pancreatic cancer.
Really?
You really? Look it up? Mm-hmm.
See, I thought coffee was good for you. You didn't.
Well, type in coffee consumption and pancreatic cancer occurrence and see what you come up with.
I kind of saw tea. Something about tea I did, too.
Well, that's sweet tea that's filled with crack cocaine. That always messes people up.
We don't drink sweet tea, so
Then you're not a Texan, are you?
No, we're not. I grew up in South Dakota, and in Washington,
Oh, well, people from South Dakota are just pure geniuses anyway. I've learned that. Well, anyway, we're completely out of time, so I wish okay. I could help you more, but I hope I've given you a good start.
Well, good start. I may call again sometime. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Bye-bye.
Appreciate it. Bye.